Greetings.
Blog Talk Radio.
I jumped the gun there. Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm honored to bring you Mythic Gaming with Tim Espy and Zach McAtee. Greetings and welcome, gentlemen. How are you?
Good evening.
Good
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I wanted to introduce a new segment to today that will be ongoing for a few months. Oracle decks. Oracle decks are usually used for fortune telling, but you don't have to use them for fortune telling. You can use them for a wide variety of purposes. I've used them in games in the past. They're very similar to different cards, having different cards in a game that incorporates cards. I've also used them for inner exploration in my meditations with the different universal symbols and so forth. So the first one I'm going to review is the Hero's Journey Dream Oracle. And that's a 52-card deck of colorful and very evocative art by an artist named Rosuli. And it's based on the life work of Kelly Sullivan Walden. Now, the whole concept is inspired by Joseph Campbell and his seminal work, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. This oracular system guides you through the timeless and universal heroic journeys we all undertake in our voyages between birth and death, including our daily forays into the night realms where we dream. So this gives you a lot of room to explore. And again, you can use these cards for fortune telling. You can use them to inspire your creativity. You can use them to tell a story. You can use them to structure a game. Now, there's a 150-page book that accompanies the cards, and it optimizes your experience by establishing a foundation, providing a structure, explaining the basis, and presenting you with many options. And this is good because in the beginning, as with all things, it's better to stick with the rules as given until you learn the mechanics, and then you can pretty much do whatever you want with the game itself. I've used the Hero's Journey Oracle twice thus far, and I was amazed by the insights that it provided. Basically, what I did was I picked one card, and then I contemplated and tried to connect it as insight into things that I'm currently undergoing. And I was very surprised by the insights that came up by doing this. Needless to say, I'll be experimenting with this tool for a very, very long time. And I already am thinking of ways to incorporating it into my Mythic Adventure game. And talking of Mythic Adventure, I started a new Mythic Adventure 2 weeks ago. And it's a continuation of our old Argonaut voyage. It kind of left off where the Facebook role-playing game left off over a year ago before the pandemic, and it kind of picked up from there. But it incorporates everything that happened before, not only in the Facebook game, but for the past 30 years or so of gaming. So I'm really excited to have started DMing again. And enough of me. We go now to Tim Espy. Greetings, Mr. Espy. How are you? I asked you that already.
I'm doing well. How have you been? I missed you last time you came in.
I'm having one of those days, as you can tell. I dropped by. You weren't there the day that I dropped by. There were two gentlemen there working. So I just told them to say hello to you and told them I'd come back when you were there. The store looked great, and you had a lot of merchandise of all various sorts. You had, the role-playing games and the card games and the board games and the video games and all sorts of other things to support those. How are things going? How are the tournaments? Have those started yet?
Oh, yeah. So it sounds like every time that we talk almost, I say that there's a new Magic set that came out. But this past weekend, a new Magic set came out. And this one is, they like to go back to the old planes that they, visited in the past and stuff. So this one, we went back to Innistrad, which is the kind of like spooky, dark setting almost. So it's perfect for this time of year. That's the reason why they're releasing two of them in a short time. So this one has to do with werewolves. So the base, you know, main creatures in it are werewolves. So people are happy because they finally get their werewolf support for Commander, and their other werewolf cards finally get some more to throw in their decks. But the tournaments, yeah, so we did a pre-release on Friday and a pre-release on Sunday and as well on Saturday. And Friday and Saturday were both full, and Sunday we had a good dozen people or so. So the tournaments have been doing really well now that everything's back. You know, relatively, we're still limiting it to 24 people per night to keep things kind of in check, if you will. But yeah, they've been doing well, and we've been doing drafts on Fridays for the past couple weeks, and those have been doing well as well.
What are the drafts exactly?
So it's a different way to play Magic. How it works is you come and all you have to bring is yourself. Everybody sits down at a table. Usually it's in pods of eight is the most optimal number. And how it works is everybody gets three packs of the same set. The one that we've been drafting or will be drafting is the new Innistrad set. So everybody gets three packs in front of them, and at the same time, everybody opens up one pack, looks through it, finds a card that they like, they choose that one, and then they pass the whole deck that they just opened or the whole pack that they just opened. They pass it, and they grab the next one that somebody's passing to them, and they draft the next card out of it. So the whole idea is to get past packs of cards, choose a card out of it, and build your deck out of the cards that you're drafting, if you will, like you're drafting in sports.
Okay.
And you build a 40-card deck out of that, and, you know, we supply the lands for it. And you build your deck, and then you play best of threes against everybody else that was in your pod and made a similar, or not a similar deck, but another deck to go against you.
Oh, that sounds interesting. So you have people playing the traditional game and then playing the drafts.
So we do draft every Friday. That's like kind of what we've been known for, if you will. So our draft crowd is usually pretty good. And what the pre-release is slightly different. It's called, the format is called Sealed, in that you come and we give you a pre-release kit. So in that pre-release kit is six packs of the new set, as well as a date-stamped promo that's a, you know, like, it's not exclusive, but it's a card in the set that you get a nice date stamped on it so you know when the pre-release was and stuff. I like them. They're pretty cool. And so how that works, you open up all those six packs that you have in your pre-release kit and you make a deck out of those six packs. You're not passing them. It's just your own six packs that you open and you make another 40-card deck out of that. And then it's also another best of three fight against each other.
And Innistrad sounds like Dungeons & Dragons Ravenloft in terms of being a setting with vampires and werewolves and flesh golems and, you know, all sorts of things like that and ghosts. And so there's werewolves now. Were there other monsters in other sets like vampires and revenants, or is this the first time they focused on a particular type of monster?
Yep. So for Innistrad, this is the first time that I'm familiar with that they focus mainly on a specific type of creature. So for this set, it's called Innistrad Midnight Hunt is the name of it. So the whole story of it is that there's a festival that happens, I'm going to get some of the details wrong, but there's a festival that happens every, you know, X years, and the festival is to keep it so that it stays day, so that it doesn't turn to night, and the people that have been stricken with some sort of werewolf, you know, something, so that they don't change, if you will. Or they don't transform. So the whole festival is to keep that going so that the whole town doesn't get, you know, all messed up and everything. But, of course, there's other people that do want it to turn nightbound is the term. It's daybound and nightbound. So there's a fight between trying to keep it day and trying to make it night. And Teferi makes, who's a big planeswalker, makes an appearance to, so his card is Teferi, who halts the sun. to try to keep the sun up as long as he can to hopefully pass the festival and keep it day. So there's a whole story going on, and you know, they do a good job of, you know, intertwining different things from other planes and stuff. So they've been doing a good job. But to speak of the creatures, so the next set that comes out very soon in November, they shoved a couple close, is also Innistrad, but it's called Crimson Vow, and that has to do with vampires mostly. So you have the werewolves coming out now, and then you have the vampires coming up. So they are revisiting, or they are just doing, you know, specific creatures. There's other creatures, of course, in the sets. There's zombies and spirits and everything, but the main focus is werewolves and vampires for this one.
So you can have the werewolves versus vampires. From what you've described, magic has evolved a lot over the years in that you can mix and match the sets. You could have werewolves and vampires against Godzilla, conceivably.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yep. Yeah, their repertoire of creatures has certainly grown. You know, back when they first came out, you had just, you know, beasts and goblins and or Mark Rosewater, his favorite creatures are slivers, so he introduced those. But yeah, you can conceivably make, you know, M, the big boss man at the store, he has the whole commander deck that is based around Godzilla. So the new Godzilla cards that came out, his commander or his leader is Godzilla. So he has the other creatures in there to help both of them. But vampires is also a huge creature subtype that has decent support, or really good support, so people are still excited for this new one to get even more support for the sub-creature type.
That is awesome. Aside from Magic, are there any other cards coming out?
Pokemon just released a couple months ago their new set that has been selling very well. The main focus of that one is a big Pokemon called Rayquaza. So it's a big stack. He's legendary, Zach, I believe, right? I would assume.
Yeah, he's a legendary.
Okay. So he's a fan favorite, so they focus on him a bit in this new set. There's also a new one coming out. Is it Celebrations is what it's called. So the 25th anniversary for Pokemon. So they're releasing a special kind of half set, special set kind of thing called Celebrations. I try to stay away from a lot of the spoilers because I like to be surprised, especially with Pokemon, because that's the one that I really like. So I know that there's, you know, going to be the old cards from back in the day, but there's some special four card ones that you put together. There's some crazy stuff coming out, but like I said, I try to keep away from a lot of the spoilers, so I like to be surprised for those. But Pokemon has been incredibly popular again. So this is going to be even more so because it's going to be like the old stuff that people remember.
Awesome. So there's a lot to look forward to then in the months ahead with card games.
Yeah. Yep. There's a lot of stuff coming out, especially for the holidays and everything. Like I said, with Innistrad coming out, it's the perfect time. You look at the boxes and they're black and orange. It's very,
you know,
fall, eventide, you know, very nice theming for the time of year that we're in / going into, especially with werewolves and vampires and zombies and everything. It fits very well.
Very cool. Zach, you're a big Pokemon fan. Is there anything that you can share without spoiling it for Tim about this new set?
I don't know too much about the card game. I used to play it before I went to college, but I haven't actually dipped into it since then. So I mainly get my Pokemon card news from Tim, but they recently revealed a larger trailer for one of their upcoming games, which plays very differently with the themes and the general play style of most of the video games so far. So I'm very excited for that one. It's set, I can't remember if they said the exact amount of years, but it's set several decades before any of the other games, kind of when the country was being founded. So it's low-tech. It's like feudal Japan-style buildings. And the idea is you're there to basically start civilization on the country and find the first Pokedex for the region, which is like the list of all the Pokemon that live there. That looks extremely fun and, like I said, very different than the other games, which have all been turn-based. This seems much more active, and you, like your human character, actually kind of is at risk of getting hit and taking damage from them because there's more of a an actual moving around mechanic as opposed to a static turn-based system.
Oh, that sounds exciting. It sounds like a new twist.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
And are there any other card games that you've heard of that sound interesting?
So I actually recently got into one that's it's older at this point, and I think it's they're getting a remastered like starter set soon. But they made a Lord of the Rings living card game. So what a living card game is that's different than a trading card game is every time you buy a box or you buy a pack, it's always the same exact cards inside of it. So whereas in a trading card game, different cards are worth different values because they might be more rare, and there's that I've got to buy a bunch, collect, and trade with my friends kind of thing to it. This game is you play as heroes trying to complete quests. And so you can use any heroes from any set that they've ever released and go against any quest from any set that they've ever released. But it means that I could sit there and say, hey, you know, oh, Tim, you know, you bought the starter box. It's the same exact starter box that I have. We could mix and match stuff from that to build a deck with, or we could just build separate decks, and we could cooperatively go through it together. So there is no competitive play. It's either you play solo or you play cooperatively trying to complete a quest together. It's very deep. It's like the pool is very deep because I think at this point you would need to buy somewhere upwards of like 120 to 150 different individual sets to have the whole entire card game.
Wow.
Some of which are harder to find now than others because they, I think they stopped printing new stuff, I think, about 2 or 3 years ago. But I only have a couple of the beginner stuff so far, like the starter set, and they put out sets that kind of follow the books. So I have the one for the Fellowship. So I haven't played through that one yet, the campaign, but it's been fun, and it's nice to have like a single-player card game, and you don't have a lot of those because everything else, like Pokemon Magic and Vanguard Yu-Gi-Oh!, it's all opponent-based. It's all you need other people to play with. This is something fun to just kind of pass the time with by yourself because you're playing against the AI. You're playing against the deck. So you pick your three heroes. Your deck has to be made up of cards that match whatever colors your heroes are. There's four different colors that focus on different types of gameplay. So maybe one of them focuses more on attack. One of them is a lot on healing. One of them's about getting a lot of resources to hopefully play more cards sooner, that kind of thing. But your deck has to match your hero's color. And then what you do is, based off of what quest you're going against, you take specific enemy cards to shuffle and make a deck. And you're trying to get through all the quests before either all your heroes die or you add to a doom tracker at the end of every turn, and it's like a timer for the game to shut off.
Okay.
And
that
so you keep
great. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. And I think the starter set is only 25, 30 bucks, something like that. And it contains enough that you can play with one other person if you wanted to do it. But they're smaller decks than like a full-size deck would be just because they're introductory. So there's one deck for each of the four colors, but you could build a full-size deck out of them.
And if, like you said, it's something you could do without anybody else, play it solo, or if you don't want to play a competitive game, that's a great alternative, and it sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've been having
when
a really
Zach
good
first
time
told
with
me about it. Oh, sorry. I was going to say when
you
Zach
go,
first told
go.
Me about it, it sounded super unique. You know, like usually, like you said, card games are, you know, competitive, playing against each other, and a lot of the games that I like to play are cooperative. And so to have a cooperative card game to go against the deck, if you will, is pretty unique, and it sounded fun.
Yeah, it does sound like a lot of fun. When are you guys going to play it? And then I'll hear that feedback.
Yeah, I can. Next time we try and hang out, if you want, I can try and bring it over to him, and then you can give it a try.
Yeah, I was going to say we can play it next time so we can talk about it on the next one.
And, Zach, you had mentioned before that you're going to a convention very soon. The conventions are a really big part of gaming. For those who've never been to one before, what is a gaming convention like?
So gaming conventions are kind of like an in-real-life version of a gaming forum. So you're going to find people from all across the country, in some cases all across the world, who are gathering in one place to engage in different games together. This specific convention, Origins, is held in Columbus, Ohio every year, and it primarily focuses on role-playing games, but also features very heavily board games, card games, as well as LARPs. I went once before in 2012, and I've been very excited to hopefully go back, and so we are going this year because they pushed it back to October. It's typically in June, and we didn't really feel up for, like, traveling to this kind of thing in the middle of the summer with how COVID was, but now that more people are vaccinated and it seems to generally be getting a little better, we're excited to go. We are we made our schedules for the event so far. So I personally am doing a lot of RPGs. I'm doing, I think, one LARP. There's a bad movie festival. It's called the Smithies. Where every year they pick, I think, 12 or 15 movies, and they break them down into categories of, like, here's a category for the scene that's only in the movie so that it got the R rating, or here's a scene with, like, the worst fake, like, technology, like, hand-waving kind of stuff. And then the audience all votes for which one wins each category. So we're both very excited. She's a huge movie person.
Uh-huh.
So she's really excited to check that out. But we're seeing the movie festival. I'm playing in an RPG that the idea is you're all playing breakfast cereal mascots, and Count Chocula has gone rogue and is raising an army of undead cereal, and you're trying to stop him. So I'm very excited to see how that one goes.
Funny.
I'm getting to finally. Oh, you go.
Go ahead.
I'm finally getting to try that alien RPG that I've told you about before. I signed up for a game of that's being held at the convention. So it'll be nice to actually have that run for me as opposed to just reading through the book. What else? I don't know if you're familiar with the Brendan Fraser Mummy movies.
Yes.
From, I think, the late 90s, early 2000s. One of
yep.
the RPGs I'm in it's kind of like a sequel to, like, the second movie, so it's set in that universe, and you're playing as the movie characters searching for the lost library of Alexandria. And I think I have another game called Spidey's on Infinite Earth, where different multiverse versions of Spider-Man are all brought together to fight against one big threat. So that, again, sounds like it'll be fun and ridiculous. Most of the ones I went for are kind of more ridiculous or humorous premises, just because I figured I never get to play stuff. I might as well go for the stuff that sounds the most crazy, you know?
Yeah, I love games
but
that mix of various media, you know, so the fact that you have things taking place in comic books or movies, I love playing that type of game also. And the breakfast cereal, there was a module for the Ghostbusters game that came out many, 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 many moons ago with West End Games that was very similar. I remember the villain, I think, was, like, based on Tony the Tiger and some other some other breakfast cereal. So it was lots of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be fun, and I look forward to being able to report in on how all of it goes. We're trying a couple of cool things. There's one that actually I think both of you would love. I saw it when I went last time, but I didn't know it existed, so I couldn't register it ahead of time. It's called Artemis Spaceship Bridge. So what do is they take a room in the convention center. They rig up, I think, six different computers and a projector screen, and you guys take the role of a crew that's piloting a ship, like from Star Trek. So one person is the captain, one person is the navigator, one person's communications, and each one of you is sitting in a different computer console that has controls on it. And it's like running like almost like a different mini game type thing. and the projector is showing like through the screens into space and like what you're dealing with. And I think every 15 or 20 minutes they like rotate who's what position. So it sounds really hectic, but really fun. I'm extremely excited to try that one out. And there's a game called Blood on the Clock Tower, which is a social deduction type game. If you're familiar with Werewolf or Mafia,
okay,
it's similar in vein to those. Like a big issue with Werewolf and Mafia and a lot of those styles of games is they're elimination games. So that means that someone's going to get killed, they're not in the game anymore, and they just have to sit there and watch until the game's over. Blood on the Clock Tower is a more advanced version of it that keeps everyone in play even after they die. So this way you're still able to affect what happens in the rest of the game and you don't feel left out. In fact, I think one of the closing mechanics is all the dead players get one final vote to kill one of the remaining people. So if you've done it wrong and people have figured out that you're the one who's been killing them off, that'll come back and bite you right at the end when you would have won.
Hmm. The Star Trek one sounds familiar. Somebody's spoken of that before, and they said it was a lot of fun. So I think you'll enjoy Artemis.
Yeah, it's supposed to be great. They run it like every hour. That's how popular it is. So I'm very excited to do that. I think it's the first event we're doing the first day we get there.
That is so cool. I can't wait to hear about all of this stuff that you'll be experiencing. And you mentioned LARPing. Have you guys ever gotten involved in LARPing before?
I tried one the last time I went to Origins, which was based off of the I can't remember the specific subtitle, but you're familiar with the Vampire the Masquerade series?
Yes.
So they have a whole bunch of different like sub-books, and one of them is about changelings. I think it might be Changelings the Lost. And so the idea is all the characters are people who were stolen by the Fae and used as an object in the Fae world. They were turned into it, like cursed to a goblet or a table, and then they managed to slip back to our world, but now the Fae are trying to bring them back. So it wasn't a very like combat-oriented LARP, but the idea was we were a bunch of people who were changelings. We had escaped from the Fae, and we had somehow found out about each other and decided to organize a cruise ship so that we could all kind of bond over our shared experiences. So we would make our characters and have to come up with like what item they were used as, maybe a power based off of it. So my character, he was used as a mirror so he could shapeshift. He could change the way he looked to reflect and look like other people. And the idea was, it turns out, big surprise, the cruise ship was actually a trap by the Fae, and they were trying to then drive it into the Bermuda Triangle so that we would all get sucked back into the Fae realm. So there wasn't a lot of combat. There was a little bit towards the end, but mostly it was a socially oriented one of like trying to figure out exactly what was going on and how to stop it. But it was a lot of fun, and I would like to try doing one of the like more involved physical ones and everything. But I know that New Jersey has quite a few that they'll kind of meet up for weekend events.
Yes,
I would like to try one. Hopefully, maybe next year.
There's one called Night Realms where we had King James of the Night Realms, the Knight with the K. We had him on several times on one of the other shows. And he's got a lot planned, and they've made a lot of adjustments because of the pandemic. They're still pretty active, and they have not only the live version of the LARP, but they have RPGs and card games and all sorts of stuff tied into the universe that they created. So you could pretty much interact with it. They have story writing, you know, like for things going on outside of the LARP. They also do a lot of events, everything from weddings to social events, other social events rather. So it sounds like a lot of fun.
Hey, maybe sometime in the next couple of years, the three of us could all maybe go to one together.
That would be awesome. When I had my TV show, I did a segment on LARP. It's still on YouTube somewhere. Thor the Barbarian, I think it was LARP, so I don't remember the title, but it was revisited a LARP with the late Black Wolf the Dragon Master. He's passed on because of COVID, but he and I went to a LARP and we filmed it, and it was lots of fun.
Yeah, I've always wanted to. It's been on, you know, my bucket list of stuff like that to do. I looked into it back in, like, the mid-2000s, like, when I first got my license, and saw that there was, like Zach said, there's, like, a decent amount of groups that do it fairly often, like, you know, full weekend kind of things. And I like the camp as well, so that kind of fits in with that, too, you know, that whole thing. So if anything, it's a nice camping trip, you know, and you get to go swing some swords and throw some spells, you know. I like the whole atmosphere that they build, you know, with the inn and everything, like the background characters, if you will. There's a gentleman that comes to the store that does he's gonna kill me. Revolutionary War reenactments.
Okay.
I always say Civil War, and he gets angry, of course. So we always talk about how, you know, like the camps that, you know, the people that make food, they go there specifically. That is their role in it. You know, they are the merchants, they are the food sellers, or you know, just any of the background supporting cast to make the whole thing feel, you know, correct, if you will. I don't know. That kind of stuff interests me.
There are also, in addition to the reenactors and the LARPers, there's also, I haven't seen these around in a while. I haven't been looking, but I they just come to my attention much more often than they come, like murder mysteries. And they used to have the medium where some of them took place in like the 1920s, others took place in Lovecraftian universes, and others took place like on space stations, or, you know, like in fantasy settings. So I was wondering if those were still around, and that's something else it's a lot of fun to get involved in. I did some impromptu acting in a few of those over the years.
Yeah, like the murder mystery dinners were still a thing.
Yeah. I've never gotten to do one, but I did act in two murder mysteries and directed.
Back
in college. It was in the first one I played the detective character. So again, like very straight laced, very matter of fact, like, you know, the detective, the smart guy detective that figures it out. And then in the next one, which I helped write, I was the crazy gardener. So it was nice to go from like one end of the scale to the absolute opposite end, because he was like manic, insane. I like walked with a hunch and like twitched a lot. I had like a distinctive, a kind of agitated voice that I, you know, that I would use, and it was really fun getting to do like both sides of that coin. Then the third year, I directed it, so I did all the casting and the rehearsals and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I had a lot of fun with those, and I've always wanted to do one of the dinner ones.
So that's something you could even do in level one.
I've thought about that in passing in my brain, about having not, you know, not an escape room type of thing, but like you're saying, like some sort of mystery, figure it out, whodunit kind of RPG.
Yeah, they sell kits for those.
You're a whole new crowd. Something to watch out for. So there's a lot going on. How about you playing games? Anything new coming out from Dungeons and Dragons?
Let me get the name real quick. There's a new book that just came out. It came out today.
Oh, wow.
Let's see. Let me get the name so I get the name right. It is The Wild Beyond the Witchlight. My buddy was talking to me about it a bit before, and, I'm not sure what, you know, where it takes place or anything, but it's, you know, it's got new creatures and a whole new story and campaign and everything. But they send or they release a special, like, alternate local game store cover. So on the Instagram, there's a couple pictures of it. It's like a nice tan with a really cool black cat. looks like he's got a bunch of different tails and stuff. Really nice art for the alternate cover. I wish I knew a little bit more about D&D so I could dive deep into it, but I flipped through the pages, and, of course, the art is amazing. So
yes. Usually the art is pretty amazing. They had a very distinct type of art when they started, but now they really, really embrace the true art in these illustrations.
Yeah. And Zach, you've been running the Pokemon RPG recently.
Yes.
Is this one that Zach invented?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. How's that coming along?
It's been going well so far. We had two sessions under our belt so far. We're doing every other Saturday. And because we're bi-weekly, we're doing like eight-hour sessions, like big, long sessions.
Wow.
Yeah. But we had everybody make characters. We did the introductory section where everybody kind of gets to know each other. And everyone's gotten a taste of pretty much all the different minute mechanics that will make up the game. They built it with a lot of, like, oh, here's the quick example of how to catch stuff, or here's a quick example of combat, here's a quick example of this. So they've all kind of figured out their niches, and now we're starting their journey across the country. So right now it's three players. It's Jamie, my friend Kyle, and my friend Dan. And I'm thinking about trying to add a fourth, but I need to see if I can find somebody with availability and interest.
It's been a long time in development, but I'm glad that it's finally running. That is awesome.
Thank you. Yes, it's, at this point, my PDF, I have like a master document of everything, and it's about 320 pages, and I'm not done yet. I counted up, and I have 84 unique quests that I built in, some of which are tied to unique locations, some are tied to unique Pokemon, like specific Pokemon, that kind of thing. But I'm like, oh man, I gotta round it up to 100. I have to. So I need to come up with some more quests to get to that number.
Is there any way you can license the Pokemon or basically modify the game so it's not Pokemon specifically, but you know, just change the story and the characters a little bit so that it's not Pokemon? Because you put a lot of work into that, and you are very creative and you're very eloquent, and I'm sure somebody wanted to play that game.
Thank you. I've thought about, because the bulk of it is a bestiary, because I came up with my own unique bestiary for the country that I made. And so I've thought about maybe converting that to be usable in other settings, kind of fleshing it out, because one of the things that I like to do is world building. And when I do world building, I like to think of it in structures like a biome, like how things would interact in real life. So any time that I've written a short story or came up with an idea for a universe, that's kind of the way I think about it in structure. So like one of my I never ended up writing it. I just wrote down a bunch of the things, but it was like I had a thing on an ice planet, right? And I was trying to think of what kind of life would be endemic to that kind of setting. And so there were canine-type animals that had they had six limbs to allow better traction on ice, and because most of the things that would be roaming in the ice would have thick, rubbery skin to keep warm, the way they hunted was they had kind of like spikes at the ends of their arms that would inject a poison. So they would have to try and get close enough to the big grazing animals to get through the blubber and poison them and then wait until they collapsed and eat them. There were... I affectionately termed them ice skates because I had an image of like a stingray. You know, are you familiar with what a leatherfold is?
No.
So a leatherfold is an ancient, I think Greek, a Greek or Roman, like monster. And the idea was it was a sentient rug, carpet, curtain, cape, some sentient piece of fabric that would sneak into people's houses at night and strangle them. And so I took that mythology and I was like, well, what kind of animal would look like that? And I was like, okay, well, how about a large flat stingray is kind of a good correlation for a living version of that. And so the idea is these things will nest in the snow and they blend in with the snow. They're white on top and they like go under it. and when people walk through them or walk on them, they'll come up and wrap around them and strangle them and eat them. Okay, but then the problem is, as a biome structure, something has to eat those, right? So
right.
The idea I came up with was, well, most of the planet, it's frozen, but there is still water underneath, just like in Antarctica and stuff. Large parts of it aren't ice all the way down. It's a thick layer of ice with water underneath. So the idea I came up with was, okay, well, there's a large, like, whale-like creature that its eyes are extremely susceptible to light, and whenever the ice skates move off of the snow and let light filter through the ice, it comes up and breaches through the ice under the assumption it will be eating the skates that let the sun through. You know, so, like, I like to structure these, like, creature biomes and biologies and stuff like that. So I thought about maybe adapting a setting book somehow, but that would certainly be like a years-long process. That would be a big project.
Yeah, it sounds like it, but it sounds interesting, and I'd certainly like to read it when it comes out.
Yeah, hopefully. I'll keep you updated as I start trying to move forward with that. We'll see how it goes.
And, Tim, how about you? Any role-playing games that you're involved with?
No, I haven't been playing anything. I generally really only do something if it involves Zach. He's the one that I usually play with when it comes to RPGs and stuff. I know that we have a date set for Dread and Ten Candles coming up in October,
yes.
Right? The end of October.
We're doing
so that'll probably be so that'll be fun. I look forward to that every year. So that'll probably be the most recent one in terms of tabletop RPGs. If a game comes across, video game comes across my or comes across the table, I'll probably play that. I've been playing some other, it's called Risk of Rain 2 with a couple people online. That's really the only thing I've been playing in terms of games or RPGs or anything.
And how about board games? Anything new and exciting coming out in that arena?
I have a couple Kickstarters that I should be getting in the next couple weeks. So Cartographers, I think I mentioned maybe last year on the show. It's a board game about the idea of that you're all cartographers trying to make, like, the most accurate map, basically. So it's got the nice mechanic where you flip over a card and it has either one color and two shapes or two colors and one shape. And then everyone picks off of that card, picks whatever option, and draws it anywhere on the map. And you're trying to get points by doing different things. So maybe you get points in this game if there's a forest that touches multiple mountains, or you get points for your biggest village, that kind of thing. But there's a sequel that comes out, should be the next 2 weeks, I think. I believe that the games are on the boat to the shipping center in the U.S. at the moment, but we're very excited for that one. The sequel looks promising. They've added a lot of fun new mechanics. The map shapes are different. There's new types of terrain. That one we're eagerly awaiting.
Yeah, Cartographers is a fun game.
You played it? What did you think of it?
Yeah, we played that a good amount of times, actually. It's fun. Comes prepared with pens or pencils that match the colors for the specific things, like for the forest or for the villages. So when you're drawing the map, it looks really nice because it's color-coded to the correct things. It also helps visualize, of course, you know, oh, like, here's my forest is right here. It's bright and green, and I can see it, you know, real nice, instead of just drawing it with a pencil. And, you know, you can make, like, we usually make little trees and stuff inside the boxes and stuff, too, to help signify. But yeah, it's a fun game. It's, you know, it's not super high contact. You're doing your own thing because you're, you know, drawing on your own map. There are cards that force you to pass your map to the next person, and you can really mess with people, and they're goblins, I believe, Zach. Like, what's the creature?
Yeah, there's 8 different types of monsters that they make different shapes, And the idea is when you're past someone else's map, you draw, like, maybe, I don't know, an X of the monster squares, and they will lose 1 point for every empty square that touches one of the monster squares. So then the other player needs to now try and fill in those spaces so they don't lose points.
And we generally try to play nice and to not really
yes.
you know, mess with people too bad. You know, saying like, hey, I'm going to put the monsters here so you can kind of work around that. Is that okay? You know, instead of just going full spike, like, I'll just put it in the worst place possible. We generally try not to do that.
And how about video games? I know that Hades, that you had described in past shows, that's out on the consoles now. I saw that it was available for PlayStation 4 and for several other consoles.
Yeah, it did really well, and it got ported to a couple different consoles. Zach's been playing it for the Switch. I played it for the PC back a while ago. There was a few conferences that came up for some video games, so there was a bunch of new stuff announced. God of War, we finally saw a new trailer for God of War, by the way. If you haven't seen it, it's up on YouTube, on IGN and a bunch of different YouTube channels. But it takes place pretty much right after-ish, kind of. They didn't really show too much. They, you know, it was just a cinematic trailer kind of thing with Kratos and his son. That should be next year. A bunch of stuff got kind of pushed back, and, you know, with COVID and everybody working from home, everything kind of got delayed a little bit. But there's a bunch of stuff coming out for the new PlayStation, and Xbox has been acquiring a bunch of different developers and stuff to kind of boost their, you know, Microsoft Game Studio library. So there's been a bunch of stuff going on in terms of video game news and everything. But for me, like, the thing that I've been playing is, of course, a couple of years old, like I mentioned before, was Risk of Rain 2. And it's a rogue-like game where, if you die during your run, you start all over again. But it's just a bunch of different characters that each have different weapons and different special abilities and everything. They all play very differently. You know, you have your stock, basic, like, robot kind of guy with a machine gun and stuff. But you also have it's actually the loader from Aliens Lee gets into. It's a yellow loader that focuses on melee combat instead of ranged. So it's a nice, cool throwback. I forget what they call it, but it's, you know, an ode to it, of course. But it's progressing through 8 different levels of varying difficulties as you keep going. And as you're killing enemies, you're getting money, which then you can open chests on the map. And those give you different upgrades and different rarities. They have, like, common, uncommon, legendaries, and mythic kind of rarities. And they progress in power as you go. So the game is meant to be played in that the chests that you open are totally random. The items that you get are totally random. But there's a thing that you can do to unlock. It's called the Artifact of Command. And it lets you choose which items you get when you open chests. So you can build your character the way that you kind of want to. You know, dealing critical damage, or there's a thing called Will the Wisp that when you kill an enemy, they explode and they do damage, you know, based on how many upgrades you have for it. There's a million different types of items, so you can build your, you know, character the way you want to. And it's just about progressing through and killing all the enemies. And there's a story there, but it's all read through, like, logs and stuff that you have to unlock. So I haven't delved – the lore is super deep, of course, but I haven't delved too far into it. There's – because this is it's not a sequel, but it's tied kind of to the first one. The gameplay is totally different from Risk of Rain 1 to 2. 1 was like a side-scroller, and 2 is not open world, but 3D explorer kind of thing. But there's lore from the people that the big evil guy fighting you know, who you're working for or something. There's a, you know, of course, crazy war, but it's just fun for me because I can play with, you know, a couple other people that I am friends with in real life. That, you know, we hop on Discord and jump into voice chat and play online with everybody so we can progress through, and you have to do different things to unlock the different characters. So we're all trying to unlock and get all the different abilities and stuff. But it's been fun. It's been what we've been playing for the past month or two. But like I said, of course, it's an older game. I haven't been playing anything new yet.
Diablo 2, I saw the graphics for the redo of Diablo 2. It looks pretty amazing.
Yep, that comes out on Thursday, I think. It comes out this week. So my one friend that I just mentioned, that's his game. That's one that he's, you know, it's so excited for it. So I'll be watching him play that for a while. I might jump into it. Like I'm familiar with 2 in that I've watched it played a bunch, but in terms of playing-wise, 3 I'm the most familiar with because that's the one I've played. So I want to see him play 2 to see how different it is, and maybe I can jump in there and play some remastered Diablo 2.
I'm mad at them for cutting off my original Diablo 2. I used to play that all the time, and then I went to play it one day, and it all of a sudden told me I couldn't play it anymore.
Yeah.
Horrible. So the new one looks good, but I'm still pretty upset. What's the preventive of taking this one away too? At some point,
yeah. Yeah, with a lot of games, you know, especially like the new games as service kind of thing, where you know it's just all online. There's no single player to it, so you know you could pay $60 for this game and next year, it's like, oh, well, it wasn't that popular, so we're shutting down the servers. And
that's happened to other games I've had for the PlayStation 2 with the NORATH. You know, there were a lot of, like, multiplayer things, and they just shut them all down, and that was that. We're approaching the end of today's show. Is there anything that you're excited about that's happening in the next month or so that we can look out for?
So for us at the store, it's going to be getting the tournaments, you know, back up and running again. Like I said, on Fridays, we've been doing drafts. On Thursdays, we've been doing commander nights. So we changed that around a little bit. So Thursday's commander, Friday is draft. I'm hoping to bring standard back for Magic on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. As well as there's another new format that came out called Pioneer that I'm hoping that a bunch of the regulars would be into because it seems like a really cool format for Magic.
Pioneer.
But, yeah, other than that, say again?
What is Pioneer? That sounds interesting.
It's another way to play Magic. So in Magic you have formats. You have Standard where you use, like, the newest cards. Then you have Modern, which you can use the newest cards plus some cards from older sets up to 8th edition or something like that. So Pioneer is not super old, but a little bit newer than Modern. So it's why I'm thinking that it would be good for a lot of our regulars is that you can use the newer cards that came out during the pandemic that you couldn't use in store because there was no in-store play going on. So the people that missed out on playing with those cards, they're legal in Pioneer. So you can use those cards as well as the new cards that have just come out. So it's a good, you know, smash together of slightly older with the new stuff that, you know, like our regulars already, you know, invested in and have a decent amount of cards in and should be able to build something out of. So we've been asking about it from a few people. So I'm really interested in the format, so I think it would be fun to do. So hopefully soon. But yeah, that's about it for us. Pokemon tournaments, unfortunately, can't happen yet, so we're still waiting on the okay for that. But yeah.
And how can somebody contact you and find their way to Level 1 Games?
So best way is on level1games.com. That leads you to our Facebook, our Instagram, and when we get new stuff, we take pictures and post it online. you can send us a message or give us a call, and anything you see that gets posted, you say, oh, hey, I'm interested in that, and I can hold it for you. You can come by and check it out. But, yeah, level1games.com and Facebook and the Instagram are the best ways.
Thank you very much. And, Zach, anything you're excited about that's coming out in the near future?
I've got the Cartographer's board game coming, and then I think I need to double-check, but I should be getting the final rules for the One Ring RPG, which I backed on Kickstarter. So I'm very excited for that, and hopefully I should be able to talk about that next time.
That is incredibly awesome. And how can people contact you?
You can always find me on Facebook or send me an email at mrnunnin@gmail.com.
Thank you so very much to both of you. It's always great to catch up with you and to catch up with the gaming world, which is vast and very complex. I will talk to you very soon. Thanks to everybody who tuned in from home, whether you called the number, whether you clicked on a link, or whether you'll join us later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventure. And we're going to close with If You Can Dream by Virginia Ackley. Thanks again, Tim and Zach.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful as always.
Thanks, Jared.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream. When love and trust are deep and fair, there is nothing your heart won't dare, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. Dream. Dream.